Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone. I am Patrick, and you're listening to the Phileas Club. This is episode number one for the month of April 2008. Welcome to the club. Hello and welcome everyone to this first episode ever of the Phileas Club. And since this is the first episode, I am going to take a few minutes to tell you, the listener, what this show is about. So simply put, this show is about world news. We are going to talk about world events, things that happened pretty much everywhere. We're not going to be limiting ourselves to any one particular country. But we're going to do this in a kind of a special way, because I guess you could find world news pretty much everywhere, no matter where you live, obviously. But what we are going to do that is that we are going to get people from several countries in every month, and we are going to have them tell us about what made the news in their country. So we are going to talk about local news and international news, obviously. And the thing that is interesting to me with that approach is the fact that you will be able to hear how different countries and different cultures approach and report on the same event. It's obviously easy to get to surf the web and to get news from the UK, for example, the US, even more easily. But what you don't get is a feeling of what the people in those countries actually think and how they feel about those pieces of information. So I'm not going to talk too much about what we're going to do, and we're just going to be doing it. Today we have two wonderful people with us. We have Gita, who is, I'm not going to be to say something silly, and I'm going to let Gita tell us what she does and who she is and say hello. So, hi, Gita. How are you today?
Hello, Patrick. I'm fine. I'm a lecturer and researcher at the London School of Economics, and so I am located in London.
Right. So you're from the UK, and if you are going to be our, how can I say, respectable voice, because you're our academic person that makes us into not complete idiots, I guess. The group as a whole. I mean, you raise our intellect to an acceptable level.
I suppose so. However, I'm also in a punk cover band, so perhaps not.
Yes, absolutely. That does need to be said. The other person is Rachel from Round Rock in Texas, U.S. How are you, Rachel?
Hello, Patrick and Gita. I am doing wonderfully. And I actually, as a profession, am a creative director for an interactive design agency here in Round Rock, which is a suburb of Austin, Texas. And I guess my real aspiration is just to be a gamer 24/7, but unfortunately I have to make a living, and I can't do it gaming just yet.
So you are one of those gaming geek types that we hear about on the news, right?
Yes, I am the elusive girl gamer. So
Okay. I think we should. I should probably tell our audience the way the show is going to be organized, and then we will just jump into it. So what we are going to do is first we are going to have a first portion, a first section of the show where we are going to just report on basically what has been making the headlines in our local countries. So we are going to have all three of us talk about what was happening a few weeks ago, and then last week, and finally this week. And then on the second part of the show, we are going to have a little debate about a couple of topics that I will introduce later in the show, and try to see and understand how each of our countries has approached these issues differently and or maybe in the same way. I don't know. We'll just all discover that together.
Sounds good.
Okay, so this is the first section of the show, the reports. So for the first report, which is going to be a few weeks ago, very eloquently titled, I'm going to start us off with what was happening in France, or rather what was reported on in France a few weeks ago. So I guess the first and most important thing that was reported on was the Tibet-China whole hoopla, which is very silly of me to call it a hoopla because it's a very serious matter, but I will do that nonetheless. So the whole Tibet thing was obviously a huge topic in France a few weeks ago. The Iraq war made the headlines a few times also during the week. The American elections, obviously, did the headlines a few times. And then something that might need a little bit more explaining, which is the Ingrid Betancourt hostage issue. What happened there is that Ingrid Betancourt is a Colombian national, Colombian citizen, who is also a French citizen. She was running for office quite a few years ago in Colombia and was taken hostage by the FARC, which are rebel forces, I guess you could say. And she's been held hostage for, I think, 5 or 6 years. Okay, let's move on from that one and go to our local elections. We had local elections in France, and our president, the party of our president, which is called UMP, lost those elections. So there was obviously a lot of debate on whether this is a huge problem for the government as a whole, or if it was a different issue, because local elections are not supposed to be a judgment from the people on the government itself, but obviously it was still a big problem. We had the Olympic flame in San Francisco and other countries, which was being, can you say we're attacking the Olympic flame, I guess?
Seizing the Olympic torch.
Right. And the issue that France having spoken against the Chinese officials in a way, in a subtle way, but in a way still, they are talking about boycotting French products in China, like the French the Chinese people army is rising and boycotting French products. We didn't hear about it a lot in the recent days, so maybe it died out. There is what we called the hunger riots, that was a huge thing too, which is, I guess, the food crisis, which we're going to be talking a little bit more later. And then a theme that is going to be coming again and again in my segment, and that is strikes. So, of course, we're French, so we're having strikes. And those were actually student demonstrations because we are having a school reform in the country. And the students are unhappy about it, as they always are about everything. Yes, I'm going to get hate mail from French students. then we had the election of the comeback of Berlusconi in Italy in the elections. And that's about it for our a few weeks ago in France. What about you, Gita? What happened in London?
Well, I think the Tibetan protesters were seizing the Olympic torch before they got to France. So the first seizure of the Olympic fire happened in London.
It's very hard to label, isn't it? The seizure of the Olympic fire. Yeah, I think that's a good way to phrase it, though.
And there was, whereas at least in France, Sarkozy has said things against the Chinese treatment of Tibet. Gordon right. Brown is determined to attend the Olympics, and this was a big problem, especially when we found out that the German chancellor is not going to be attending the Olympics in Beijing. So there's a lot of hoo-ha about what will Gordon Brown do and what does that represent for the British people, who were generally very happy that people were seizing the Olympic torch, if not for the Tibetans' cause, then just because it was a little bit of excitement. And then the other big international news, other than the U.S. elections, which I'm sure we'll be talking about more as we go on, so I'm going to leave that a bit, because the bigger breaking news seems to happen last week rather than a few weeks ago.
Yes.
The other news, and possibly more covered in Britain because it's a former British colony, were the elections in Zimbabwe.
Yes. Okay.
And Robert Mugabe trying to cling to power, and what were the actual results of the election, and whether the Movement for Democratic Change was going to get any part in it. And, people were laughing here because Mugabe was saying things like, I'll step down so long as I'm not prosecuted.
Right. And if you thought we couldn't get more depressing than that, you are wrong, because you'll see what we are going to talk about in the debates.
Okay, but on the national level, we'll go to some lighter news.
Please, let's.
The big news of a few weeks ago, again, ties together with France, because it was the President Sarkozy and his wife's visit to Britain.
Why do you laugh when you say, and his wife?
I suppose because she's only been his wife for a very short period of time, and many people have bets on that she will only be his wife for a very short period of time.
Okay, did you hear about Sarkozy and the whole wife thing, Rachel?
Yes, actually I did, and I'm trying to think if it was because I was reading online news from the UK, and it may have been, but okay. Most of what we're hearing on our end is that she behaved herself nicely, and that she was dressed very, very conservatively, and that she carried herself very much like a lady. I think that everybody was waiting to see what her demeanor was going to be in that role.
Before I go back to Gita, I just want to say for the listeners that what happened was President Sarkozy got a divorce a few months ago and then got remarried to Carla Bruni, who is a supermodel. Well, who was a supermodel a few years ago. And he got remarried pretty fast, which was surprising, let's say.
And for people who don't know her past, she's been credited with breaking up Mick Jagger's marriage to Jerry Hall, as well as leaving Eric Clapton flat, amongst many other.
And also, she was dating a very highly ranked left-wing official, because Sarkozy is right-wing. He was from the Socialist Party in France a while ago. So she's had a wild ride, let's say. Anyway, back to the visit in the UK, Gita?
Yes, well, she came to Britain and met the Queen, dressed more or less like the Queen would have dressed when she was younger, so well thought of. And upon leaving, there were some very funny stories. For example, a supermarket that's not particularly a very highly ranked supermarket called Asda have said that they want to use her as their commercial advertising woman. And more importantly, Gordon Brown has tried to appoint her to spearhead a government initiative at injecting more style and glamour into British national life.
Wait, the what?
Yeah, he's he said that he's going to have her relocate to London for a few months starting in June, and she's going to try and overturn Britain's inferiority complex about its sort of style or lack of style with relation to continental European countries like France and Italy.
Again, what?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is what we say. And as he said, whose citizens are effortlessly stylish and sophisticated.
is it effortless to be as stylish as you are, Patrick?
Well, I would think so, but I wouldn't expect the English to think so. I mean, you know.
Well, Gordon Brown isn't exactly the most stylish prime minister we've ever had.
So maybe he's easily impressed, is what you're saying. Although, well, we have to say that Carla is very, I call her Carla. She's very stylish. I mean, she's a supermodel. So I despise her because of her singing career. I think she's completely talentless, and she's been touted as a brilliant singer and songwriter. I think she's ridiculous, but anyway. Is she even a native English speaker or something to that effect, or...?
She's Italian, isn't she?
Yeah, she's Italian.
Daughter of an Italian concert pianist.
Yes.
Strange. Okay, I don't really understand that last one, but okay, keep going, Gita.
And the last bit of news, local news, there have been a lot about child abductions in the UK. And the most famous case, I don't know if you've heard about it, Patrick and Rachel, was a little girl named Madeleine McCann who was abducted in Portugal.
Okay.
But a few weeks ago, there was another little girl who was abducted on her way home from school, and she came from a very poor background. And there was this story that unraveled. She was finally found a few weeks ago, and it turns out that a lot of her family have something to do with it.
Okay.
Wow, that's news. I recall that story, but I didn't hear that she had she'd been found.
Yeah, this isn't the little girl who went missing in Portugal, though. This is a different girl was taken in England, and it turns out, it looks like anyway, nobody's quite sure because the case hasn't gone through. But because in the higher profile case with the two surgeons who lost their daughter in Portugal, they were able to get quite a lot of money from even big businessmen like Richard Branson, who owns Virgin, that they staged the abduction of this girl so that they could get some money.
Wow.
Okay, that was depressing story number two.
okay, well, I'll end there and hand on to Rachel.
Okay. So my bits of news, you know, I guess because I'm over here in the United States, there are certain bits of news that I think are probably open to larger conversation, and really everybody, quite a few people have their eyes on the election and the concerns around the election, and you know, on this side, actually, one of the things that we keep coming around to news-wise has been really whether or not the fight that's been going on between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama is really tearing apart the Democratic Party and could possibly result in dividing that group in such a way that would necessarily allow John McCain to come out the victor, just because of the issues around that.
I'm guessing that pretty much everyone who's listening to this show is going to know about the American election. But just in case, there's a couple of people who have been living in a cave for the past I don't know, 6 months, give a little bit of background about this, and then ask you a question about it too, Rachel. So what's been happening is that the Republican candidate, who is John McCain, was nominated to be the Republican candidate, basically. So that race is done in the primaries. But then on the Democratic side, there is Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, who are still running in the primaries to become the Democratic candidate. And the problem is they are running against each other. So they are saying, if you want to say it simply, they are saying bad things about one another, which McCain could then use in the actual election. And that would have some validity because they were said by someone from their own side. And what I wanted to ask you, Rachel, is something a little bit strange that I heard. I was actually in Germany visiting my girlfriend over the weekend, and she told me about a theory that's a little bit weird, which was that they had back there in Germany, which was Clinton is a little bit behind in the polls in the voting in the primaries, and she's still going anyway. And she's going to go to the end, even though there's a slight chance, only a slight chance that she's going to win, because she wants Obama to run against McCain to lose, because she thinks Obama is going to lose, and she's sabotaging his campaign so that McCain gets elected, and then she comes back in 4 years and wins against McCain. What do you think? Is that completely wacky or...
No, actually, somebody just yesterday morning here at work, we were having conversation, and I was telling them about a little bit about what we were going to talk about, and they came up with the exact same theory, and we kind of laughed it off, but I think that certainly could be an underlying concern, and whether or not, you know, again, all speculation. Could it play out like that? Most certainly, it really could. Do I think that really is happening? I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think that it's such a close race right now in the mind of Hillary Clinton, and it's so very exciting. You know, it's a race. The potentially the first woman candidate president. And then we have the first African American, and this is really exciting. And so I can see that the drive would be to carry this through.
And there's an interesting aspect to this as well. If you speak to people on the academic side of things, so for example, I have a friend who's a gender theorist, and she does work on party selection in the Labour Party. Or in just generally UK political parties of women.
Well, listen, here on the Phileas Club, we have a higher ratio of women. So I think we're doing our part.
Yeah, I think lots of places things are changing. But the point is, she was saying that she felt that America would be more ready from a gender perspective. Most feminists would say America is more ready for a male, even if he's black, than for a woman.
And there's
all these theories.
Yeah, and you know, but I think that you really hit on something there. If the candidate, if Hillary was not the candidate here, and it was a male, I think that I don't know if there would be such a strong drive to carry this to the very end. I mean, I think as a woman, she probably really feels that she has to fight. And that may be to the detriment of the party and ultimately to the detriment of that party achieving getting their candidate in office.
Right. Yeah, well, so. there is a definitive strong motivation for bringing a woman into the race for the first time as a candidate. But okay, let's move on from the election, because I think we're going to be talking about it too much if we don't stop right now. So
sure. One of the other things that caught the attention of myself and a lot of people here, not only in Texas, even though this did occur here in Texas, but really around the nation, is the Mormon the fundamental Mormon compound in El Dorado, Texas.
Okay. I've heard about this, but I want, please explain it to us, because it sounds completely crazy.
And I have some interesting, just a little bit of interesting background information as well. There is a fundamentalist Latter-day Saints, which is the Mormon group compound that was set up in 2004, or created in 2004. Fundamentalist Mormons are a very fringe group of Mormons that still follow and practice polygamy, are very much removed from modern society. And this is one of those where I believe it was an outside call that was received by the authorities that there was a girl that was being abused there. And that caused them to actually raid the compound. This happened several weeks ago, about 3.5 weeks ago. And there they found 432 children and 53 girls between the ages of 14 and 17. Many of them are pregnant. Many of them, we could not tell who were the fathers of their children. And basically what we're dealing here with is a religious group that has come together and allows for there to be relations between and marriages under their belief to very young girls, you know, as young as 12 and 13 years old. And I've had conversations with different groups of people with very different opinions. And, you know, groups of people and friends of mine.
Different opinions? How can you have another opinion than be appalled by this?
And that's what I thought. You know, the fact is there's some concern with the fact that the government has gone in and removed the children and moved them into protective custody away from their mothers. And the mothers this goes back to what we're talking about, and I don't mean to overrun the show with women's issues, Patrick.
No,
but,
please do. I'm a feminist.
But I actually happened to watch I think it was the Today Show, or I think it was actually Good Morning America. They interviewed three of the women, the mothers, and they call themselves sister wives on the show. And I really felt that I was watching Stepford Wives, you know, these automatons that were really programmed to react a certain way. They almost chanted their responses to the questions. It felt very rehearsed, you know. So my father, for example, when we were discussing this, he was so concerned and upset with the fact that these children who were raised in a very different society than what we have here in the U.S. today were removed from their mothers. You know, he understands and felt, okay, yeah, they need to be moved away from that very dangerous situation, but he was really concerned about them being moved away from their mother. You know, I was just like, get the kids out of there, get the wives away from the husbands, you know, and see where everything goes.
Okay.
Well, this has got to do with, you know, ideas of freedom of the religion, the idea of whether state and church should be kept separate, or the state has the right to intervene in people's consensual, if that's what we want to call it, social activities, whether, you know, laws that are passed, you know, for example, like what's the age of consent, whether they should apply to groups that have been doing things culturally for centuries, you know, what's the story with this? So,
well,
it's long-standing debates.
Yeah, and I guess there would be also a lot to say about this. I think there would be a lot to say about many things we're talking about in this show. So I'm going to start again with what happened last week. So what happened last week in France was illegal workers going on strike. I told you I was going to talk about strikes a lot, but I don't know if you've ever had that happen in your countries. Illegal workers who go on strike to get papers, does that happen in the U.S.? I know that there are a lot of illegal workers in the U.S. and probably in the U.K. too, but do they ever go on strike?
You know, they're afraid. Illegal workers really are afraid of being deported right now.
Of course. Gita, illegal workers on strike? Does that
No.
seem? Okay. So strike is definitely a French thing. The other thing was strikes in the harbors because they were protesting against a reform that will privatize the handling activities in the harbors. And then the big thing last week was Sarkozy, our president, he was again in the news because he did like an interview a year after his election. And he did something that was, I'm interested to hear how you guys heard about it, if at all. He did something that was very new in France anyway, in the presidential function, I guess, which is he admitted making a lot of mistakes, especially on the communication front. He is still staying strong on the reforms that he wants to do. He's been getting less and less popular in the polls, but he's still staying strong. He says the country does need the reforms, and he's going to do them. He's done a few ones already, important ones, but he's going to keep going. But he did admit to making quite a few mistakes, which was weird of hearing him humble and him and as a person and as a president, I guess. And again, I have news from the German side of things. This weekend, again, with my girlfriend, I was in Germany, and she told me what one of the newspapers was saying about it, and I'm going to try to say the name of the newspaper and get a laugh out of every listener, probably. It was the Süddeutsche Zeitung, which is the
Zeitung.
Zeitung. Thank you. Is there anything you don't know, Gita? Anyway, so what they were saying was that apparently he's the best, so why doesn't he show it? Why doesn't he show what he can do, basically, was their approach to it. And aside from that, they were saying that his wife was being more discreet, that he takes responsibility for his mistakes. They were concerned about the fact that France is going to be taking the EU presidency in 2 months. Apparently, they're scared because France is, he acts very strongly, I guess, et cetera, et cetera. Did you guys hear about that at all?
I heard a little bit about it.
Okay,
no,
Gita,
I haven't
go
heard
ahead.
Anything about it, yeah.
Well, basically, I mean, it was covered more as a part of, I guess we'd say it's the last week and a half news, with Gordon Brown starting to admit weaknesses and mistakes in policies, particularly tax policies. I'm going to talk more about that later.
Okay.
But,
so we'll talk a little bit later about that. And then, and we'll also talk about something that happened last week, I think, which is China admitting to, like, international critics in admitting that it has faults in this whole issue with Tibet and wanting to open talks with Tibet. That was, I was floored when I heard that. I was sure it was never going to happen. But yeah, we're going to talk a little bit later about that too. So that was it for last week for me. What about you, Gita?
Well, our international news last week was all about the presidential elections because of the Anglo-American special relationship. I suppose what happens in the U.S. is of special importance and interest in the U.K.
Okay.
And, you know, tied to that, which I'm sure Rachel's going to talk about, so I won't go that far into it, but the story of Obama's pastor, his church priest that he had about 20 years ago, who's been making some very strange inflammatory statements. So that was a lot in the news on the international level. And then kind of international, or it became international, but and I suppose it is international in a sense, is housing prices falling in the UK, the government not wishing to inflate the currency that's doing very well. The reason the story went international, Gordon Brown flew to the U.S. to meet with different Wall Street bods and to meet with George Bush to figure out what to do about this problem.
So did they find a magic solution to get us out of the recession that we're heading into?
Well, not really, but the banks have agreed not to increase their rates, you know, the sort of basis points they put mortgages at over the prime rate. So
okay,
keeping,
so we're saved.
Yeah, mortgage rates down a bit, and okay. They've said that they would still grant mortgages to first-time buyers and things like that. So it's still not saved, but there's something being said and happening a little bit.
Okay.
And then the big local news, aside from the Shannon Matthews case, which we talked about earlier, and bigger than that, and it should be bigger than that, are the local government elections and more specifically the London mayoral elections that are taking place tomorrow. But it's been big news about the different candidates and their policies and what's been going on with
that.
So
who's going to win the elections, in your opinion?
I think Ken Livingstone, who is London mayor, is going to remain London mayor because his chief opponent is a man known as Boris Johnson, who's the Conservative Party or Tory candidate, as they're known here. And he's, you know, even for the people who like him, he's a public school, which means, you know, sort of Oxbridge-educated fop who says some very strange things. I mean, he's not well-trained at giving media interviews, and he's done things like referred to black people as pickaninnies, which is a very racist term. And he's said lots of really, well, faux pas would be a kind way of referring to the things that he says. And he's just this strange, weird, fumbling character.
So basically, Livingstone is going to win not because he's good, but because the other guy sucks.
Well, the other guy sucks, but he's been getting loads of votes on the polls and things. Lots of people find him like a lovable fool. So
that's always the best reason to elect someone. You know, he's a lovable fool.
Yeah, well, it seems to be working for him.
Okay, well, we'll hear more about that, I guess, in the next episode. We actually didn't hear about the London elections too much in the news here, and we're really close to you. So I'm guessing that you didn't hear about that in the U.S., Rachel.
No, we did not.
So what happened last week in your country?
Sure. Again, my stuff is a little bit more slanted towards what I'm most exposed to,
yeah,
and
sure.
Working in creative media, there was an article that went around pretty hot. Heard about it from several different people. An art major, Eliza Schwartz, I believe she's an art major, approaching and preparing for her thesis at Yale, created her art exhibit. And this is her senior art project, and it's a documentation of a 9-month process during which she artificially inseminated herself as often as possible and then induced miscarriages. And her exhibit is going to feature video recordings of these forced miscarriages as well as collection of blood from the process. And it was just shocking. And there's been some real fire across the internet on whether or not this was a hoax, whether it was valid, if she was just doing it for attention. So that was a pretty big story here in the Austin area in particular, just because we're a pretty artistic group of people.
Okay. I'm gonna sound like an idiot, but when you say Texas, I think cowboys, and that's.
I know. I was really planning on working on my country accent, so I could say y'all, and it would work much better. No.
That's really strange. It seems like something really shocking that would have made its way to France, but I've never heard about it. Anyway, mm-hmm. keep going, mm-hmm. Rachel.
So that was a really talked about item. Of course, we've alluded to it several times, the fact that Barack Obama's pastor, Reverend Wright, he went on his tour, and I call it a tour. He was on a lot of television talk shows and spoke in different places, and I'm not certain where or why he felt the need. Perhaps it was initially to try to help Barack Obama, but
that's a funny way of helping. Maybe you can tell us what the story is with Reverend Wright. I don't think we talked about this on air. Maybe some people are not familiar with that story.
Sure. So the story actually started quite a while back when they really started to when news reporters really started getting into the history. You know, who is this candidate? What's going on? One of the things that was lit upon was the fact that Barack Obama attends a church where this pastor, Reverend Wright, preaches, and he is. He does a style of preaching that is what we would call the old fire and brimstone type approach. So, you know, there are very many different types of churches and different ways of practicing religion. His is very, very active. And some news clips were released that actually were taken quite out of context. I did go back and watch the full clips, but they were very, very, very inflammatory comments. And
right, he was saying stuff like "God damn America," which is very, I'm guessing, you know, that phrase in itself.
Yeah, but some of the things he was saying aren't necessarily untrue. So, for example, he was saying that he had served in the military, and that his daughter had just gone to Iraq to serve her country. So, therefore, he and his family are patriotic. And he said, well, can Dick Cheney say that?
Right, absolutely. So but I agree that there is a lot of context. But what I meant to say was that I'm guessing any time you put someone, especially if he's black, on television in the U.S. saying, God damn America, you're going to get a strong reaction and not a positive one.
Right. And you know, one of the things, too, is whether or not, and this is me kind of going out there just a little bit, whether or not you believe it. I have been to just a plain, predominantly white Baptist church, and I have also attended a predominantly black Baptist church. Basically, the same religion. They, you know, they look at the same, read from the same Bible, sing a lot of the same songs. The way that they the pastor or the reverend preaches to the congregation is very different from one another.
Well, I guess it's everyone can admit to the fact that when it was presented a few weeks ago, it was taken out of context, and Obama, I think, did approach the thing very, very elegantly, and he didn't condemn, he didn't distance himself too much from Reverend Wright, who was his reverend, who married him, who baptized his children. He was very respectful.
It was handled beautifully.
Yes, exactly.
You're exactly right. I couldn't have architected it to be handled much more gracefully than the way that it was handled. You know, from a PR perspective, I just thought, gosh, you know, he didn't denounce him, and that was powerful. But then, you know, the result of this last week, it just kind of imploded, and there were even more inflammatory remarks.
Because Reverend Wright went on TV in front of cameras and said what he said before 10 times worse, which is completely unbelievable to me. I was flabbergasted, which is,
yeah,
you know, I don't use that word lightly. I was, you know, sorry, go ahead.
But who's funding it? That's the question. Is it Hillary Clinton or is it the Republican? Somebody is egging him on to make more public appearances.
Well,
and that's the question people aren't asking. Yeah, because somebody's told him, and this is what's come out already in the media, somebody's told this man that he's being deemed to be unpatriotic and he needs to go on air and clear his name, and that would be the best way he could help Obama. So he thinks he's doing the right thing because other people are feeding this man who's a bit naive about the way public life works.
What do you think, Rachel?
I think that I guess religious leaders probably need to stay out of politics. much like Gita said, he's approaching this. I think he personally was offended by being called unpatriotic, and I think he feels the need as a proud man to stand up for himself, and he also thinks that by being strong, he's probably helping Obama not, and it's a naive approach to that.
Okay, next topic. Let's move on.
Next topic. Earth Day went on. It came. I guess it was. Was that just last week?
No, I think it was more recent than that. Maybe we can move on to this week. So this week in France, Sarkozy again was in Tunisia. He was lobbying for his Mediterranean Union project. He wants countries in the Mediterranean to unite into a political entity to have more strength in the world theater, I guess. And unions are telling us that they are going to go on strike against the reforms of the retirement administration. So again, strikes. I don't want to sound like a broken record, but that's what's been happening. And finally, yesterday we heard about the biggest cultural product of the year, the one that's going to bring in the most money, probably. And I want to ask, maybe Rachel, you're going to know that, but Geeta, do you know what cultural product that's going to be?
No.
Okay. it's probably we're guessing here, but it might very well be a game that's called Grand Theft Auto 4.
Oh, I do know that one. Yes, we had people queuing all night for that.
Well, it's a very successful game, and it's the one that brought all the controversy, because it's the one where you can slip with hookers and then kill them and stuff like that. It's very violent, very realistic. I'm guessing you heard about it too, Rachel?
Oh, definitely. Many people from my office here were standing in line, purchased it ahead of time. Really big deal. They're locally, they did an interview with one of these facilities, I guess stores that sell this game, and interviewed some people there and talked about it. You know, the first hours they were able to play it. So
did you ever play the game? It's number 4, so there were a few ones before that. Did you ever play it or not?
Yeah, I played I guess 2 and 3. I played both of those.
Do you think that the comments, the controversy has some grounds, or?
Well, I do have a somewhat conservative approach when it comes to gaming and children. I don't agree that children should be playing very violent video games like this. So that's why it's for mature audiences. As far as being an adult playing a video game, it didn't make me feel any more violent than I normally do.
but maybe so, you feel very violent in general. So
right, exactly, exactly. No, it didn't really have any impact. It's a game. To me, the graphics haven't gotten so good that I'm able to suspend reality. I don't really get that. Is it tacky? Yeah, I think it's tacky, but there are a lot of movies out there that are worse. So
okay. You know what? I did play the game for a little bit, and the thing that surprised me the most, that we never hear, I don't know if it was the case in the previous games, but this one, we never heard about that in any media outlet at all. I played the game, launched it, went into a room in that game, and turned the TV on. And the social commentary that was displayed through the TV shows that were, running on the TV in that game were really, really strong. I mean, it was very ironic, very perverse, obviously, but it was scolding things like reality TV, the cult of money, the cult of the bling, a lot of things like that that I thought were very relevant and very cleverly put. And we never hear about that in that game. It was somewhat surprising to me to find it in a game that's supposed to be just violent and controversial.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's not talk about that game for too long. Geeta, what happened this week in your lovely country?
well, As I sort of mentioned before, Gordon Brown has started, well, if we start at the national level, I'll work my way up to the international level because Rachel had brought up the big issue. But so I'll start at the national level. But Gordon Brown has admitted making mistakes in something that he shouldn't have ever made a mistake on, which is tax policy in the UK, because as most people know, he used to be the Chancellor of the Exchequer, which is the man who makes all sort of Treasury policy. Gordon Brown was claiming that he was going to be less New Labour, more old Labour, and more, you know, the working man's champion. And then he abolished the 10p rate of income tax, which is the rate that people on the lowest income would be charged up to a certain level. So it was like the sort of starter rate. And so then a lot of the poorest people in the UK had... you know, the same sort of tax rate as the highest earners.
Okay, that's very strange. Didn't someone wake up one day and say, we're going to vote on that thing. It might not be a good idea.
Well, he had a problem with his own MPs threatening the government and threatening to have a vote of no confidence, which would be him being removed from power.
So what is he going to do? Is he going to go back and say, oops, okay,
yes, let's... Yes, well, that's what he's done. He's done that today, especially, but even last week, he admitted making mistakes. And then, you know...
he's reinstated that tax rate for the poor?
Yeah, he's reinstated it all. Said he made a mistake, and he's reinstated the soulless policy and said that he'll compensate people who are affected by this tax change. So that's going to be announced. Like the actual monies that they're going
you know
to be spending.
I don't remember ever thinking something bad of Gordon Brown because I honestly don't care. But if I did, I'm taking it back this minute. I think what he's doing is admirable. Going back and admitting your mistake and actually changing your policy because you think you did something wrong for a politician.
Except why did he make the policy in the first place? Sure,
right,
but Chancellor of the Exchequer and then as Prime Minister would have known the difference, and he would have been told by people.
You just choose to see the glass half empty. I choose to see it half full.
And now he's having a problem with the opposition parties saying that he's a weak, feeble, and ineffectual Prime Minister. And you know, anyway, all this this talk about Gordon Brown, it has a bigger impact because, as I said, the London mayoral elections and the local government elections are tomorrow, and with regard to Rachel's comment earlier, one of the stronger candidates that's standing for office is the Green candidate, and this might be the first time that the Green Party gets, if they don't win the seat, at least, you know, gets pretty high up as maybe one of the top three or four parties in the election.
Oh, so you British people really hate the environment, or did until now?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, other topics? Sorry.
I actually have a quick question on that. What do you think has changed, Gita, that has resulted in the Green Party candidate becoming more popular?
Well, I think just generally, global warming and the hype about environmental issues. I mean, there's been a lot of you know, crisis points brought up to people about what's happening. People are starting to see a change in the climate, starting to see that there are weird weather changes, that we have droughts, that, you know, they've had conversations in England like last summer about how do we make sure that we keep the level of the Thames, the river here, at the right level because it seems to be declining. And they were talking about getting a tugboat to bring an iceberg from Scandinavia and tug, I mean, really ridiculous things, tug it over so that
you
it could melt.
You can't be serious.
Yeah, there are all sorts of really strange things that happen over here and get this stuff.
How can we get the river high enough? Well, let's bring a huge block of ice.
Yeah, exactly. Tug it by boat, right?
Well.
So, anyway. Okay. That's the idiocy of what happens when you get a bunch of generalists in to talk about policy. Nobody knows what they're talking about. And they come up with wacky suggestions. And then, of course, the international news is the Austrian incest case, which Rachel brought up earlier, and it adds to this whole idea of abductions by families of their own girls. And
okay, we're going to be talking about that depressing topic a little bit later. I think depressing is going to be the word of the show. I hope it's not going to be like that for all future shows, but we never know. Rachel, what about you? Can you bring us home and close that part of the show?
Sure, and I'm not going to talk about anything depressing whatsoever.
Cool.
Well, maybe it is, just a little bit. We love our stars, and the big news this week is a music artist named Miley Cyrus, and she's a 15-year-old girl, has a really clean reputation, really nice, sweet demeanor. She's just a precious thing. We had a chance to actually see her interviewed by Barbara Walters. So she's the little superstar over here. And she was asked to pose for photos by Annie Leibovitz. And she had some photos shot of her, very, very nice, good photos. And then her parents left, and apparently, there was one last shot that was taken in which she was clothed, but her back was exposed, and it's resulted in just a firestorm around the fact that it's indecent and that this is ruining her reputation. There have been blog postings put together and sites set up just to help parents explain to their children why Miley Cyrus posed with her back exposed. I mean, it's really gotten out of hand.
You know what? I heard that about that story very shortly, just a little bit, but the whole thing is just because her back was exposed?
Well,
but
that's
back,
what
it's not like the whole back, including her bum, right? It's just
no.
Her back. Like, if she wore a swimsuit and, I mean, or even a ballroom gown, her back mm-hmm. might be exposed. It's like that, right?
Right, right. And
Yeah, sorry. Obviously, Gita and I seem a little bit surprised by the whole story and the fact that it seems to be a huge scandal over there, but you seem affected by it, Rachel. Do you also think that it's something that she was? I heard she was misleaded into taking that picture, and it was dishonest and something really bad, basically.
Well, I feel bad that she's, because of her popularity and somebody who's only 15 years old is being held up to being a role model for children everywhere. That's a very big burden for somebody so young to carry. And while she has the support of her parents, the photo, first of all, was not distasteful. That photo, it was just fine. I think that I'm concerned about the fact that the U.S. media and many parents, not all parents in the U.S., were so upset. I think there's this sense of overreaction because of some of the antics of some other relatively young stars and their behavior. We have Lindsay Lohan, Britney Spears, that were these nice, cute little Disney girls that have then grown up and been pretty distasteful in their behavior and, you know, are on right. drugs and leading very reckless and ridiculous lives. So I think that Miley Cyrus is being scrutinized, I guess, too aggressively for fear that she's going to turn out like them, or, you know, it's just a really bad situation. I think, you know, I really don't know what to say. I don't have children, so right. I don't know if suddenly, well, being a mother puts a different perspective, or a father puts a different perspective on the matter.
Honestly, I don't think it's either a children or art issue. I think if you get that upset about a girl, even if she's 15, showing her back, you're putting things out of context and making people...
Right, I know. I think that the people who should be scrutinized are the ones who've sexualized what's a completely not sexual photo.
Right. Thank you, Gita. That's exactly what I wanted to say, and you said it better than me. Anyway.
Exactly. So that was the big news. Anything else this week? The tax IRS tax rebates were issued starting this week. So it was really great for some of us who fit into a particular income bracket. Our national income tax, we were actually given a rebate as part of the stimulus package, and that equated to more than 130 million individuals receiving a $600 check in the mail from the government. Wow. Or $1,200 if you filed jointly. So
I can tell you that would never, ever happen in France. Bill Maher, who's an American comedian, said something very funny about this. He said George Bush incited people to, for example, he said you could spend that money on gas and thus reduce your gas bill, which means, according to Bill Maher, that you are paying taxes to the government, they give you back your taxes, and then you pay gas companies, which are basically the government. So they come back to it.
Exactly. And then with the price of gas right now anyway, yeah. Somebody who drives one of these big, huge trucks, as we all drive here in Texas, means they can fill up their tank a couple times.
No,
I don't drive a truck. And
yeah, that was going to be my next question. yeah, we could talk about the price of gas too, but it involves calculations that are too complicated for me. But I think however expensive the gas is in the U.S., I think it's still very a lot more expensive here in France. But anyway. Okay, is that it?
That is it.
Cool. So I guess we can get into our second section, which is the debate section. And we are going to be doing that right now. Okay, and we are now going to be talking about a couple of topics that were a bit more interesting than the other ones that we wanted to really discuss amongst the three different countries to see how we approached each of them. We did end up talking quite a bit about other topics too in the first section, but those ones were the ones that we really wanted to focus on. So the first one, I guess, is obviously the huge story of China, the Olympics, and their antics in Tibet. I guess the one thing that I would like to talk about is the fact that there was a big controversy when China got the nomination for the Olympics, saying that given their disrespect for human rights, some people were saying it would force them to pay more attention to the human rights demands from other countries. And some said that it was a huge scandal because they didn't observe the basic human rights in the first place. So I guess, well, Geeta, I'm going to take your opinion on this first. What do you think? Is it a good thing because it will force them to do more, or is it a bad thing because they're not doing enough already?
Well, I think the fact that China has said that they're willing to discuss what their policy is means that there is some impact.
You mean with them opening being willing to open talks with Tibet? They recently stated.
Yeah, well,
that.
Just generally open talks about at the beginning, before this whole Olympics torch grabbing, China was very firm that it was doing what it had a right to do, and nobody should get involved from the outside. That it, you know, any international powers that wish to express their censure at Chinese actions were getting in the way of China's right to self-determination. Well,
right.
This has shifted things a bit.
But some people, well, the Dalai Lama's aides have came out and said that there has been things like that stated by China before, and there have been talks before, but they never led anywhere. So do you think that could just be basically China saying 100 days before the Olympics start, yeah, we're going to do something, and then just push it under the rug and forget about it?
Of course, that's a possibility. We can't tell. I mean, you know, it's hard to, we're not psychics here. We can't tell what's really going to happen. But there has been international pressure, and these protesters have been able to get Tibet on the agenda because of the Olympic Games. So the point is, there is something happening here.
Do you guys think it would be of any use for if world leaders didn't go to the opening ceremonies in protest, or is it just like, you know, whatever, come, don't come, the Chinese are not going to care?
I have a funny feeling that we're going to see the same sort of factions emerging, where the U.S. and Britain go to the opening ceremonies and a lot of the European countries boycott it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I guess we'll find out about that in a few months. Okay, next topic, the food crisis that is also called in France the hunger riots, which is basically, for people who don't know, apparently we don't have enough food for everyone in the world. The thing is, the prices are rising, the prices of basic materials, I guess, like cereals and stuff like that, are rising for everyone. The problem is, for food for poor countries, food is like as much as 40% of what they spend money on. So if that doubles, it's a lot of money for them, and they're not. It's not like they're going to be not going to be able to buy their iPods. They're not going to be able to buy foods. Hence the riots and the food crisis. Now, this is something that's really surprising to me, because I was under the impression that we had enough food for everyone. That I was under the impression that we were destroying food because we were producing too much of it because it was subsidized. So what happened in the past, I don't know, a year or year and a half, that made it so we don't have enough food for the whole world, basically? Or that it took that extreme turn, that it's turning into such a huge problem now. Food wasn't a problem 2 years ago, except in some local countries, obviously. Geeta, maybe you're going to be able to explain this to me a little bit better.
Yeah, there's a few things. Firstly, it's got to do with the rise of biofuel and the need to have certain food products produced to fund this new need for alternative energy sources.
But isn't biofuel, you're talking about corn being made into ethanol, I guess?
Uh-huh, yes.
Isn't that still a very small part of the energy produced?
It is, but it's growing, and there's a lot of resources going into it. And in a lot of these countries, resources such as water that might be used to fund what would be consumption agriculture is being diverted to fund commercial crops, cash crops.
So you mean crops that are going to be turned into energy?
Into
food.
Energy or for export? I mean, you know, if you ever read Amartya Sen's famous book, you'd know that there's never been a problem, even during the greatest famines in the world, of having enough food. The problem is that a lot of the foods that are being produced have been produced for export or for commercial uses.
Wow. Okay, so is that going to become better? Is the situation going to become better now that we've heard about it? Or is that not going to happen?
Well, what the Western countries, well, some of the sort of more conscious and conscientious factions in Western countries are saying we need to do is have fair trade policies for workers, you know, pay them certain wages and things. The body shop in the UK just released this big report on the 9 things that one needs to have that constitutes fair trade, like not using child labor, like paying people living wages, etc. You know, those are the policies some of the conscientious set are putting forth, but it's not really solving the problem. But it's really hard to solve the problem when you have governments that are willing to bend down for the commercial groups in other countries and for Western governments or other governments so that they get certain valuable resources put towards what they need.
Rachel, we were talking about bioethanol, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I think, what was it, Ohio, one of the two, is producing a huge amount of corn. And some people say that this is the reason why bioethanol is being developed, when it's actually not fuel efficient at all, because you need a lot of carbon emissions to produce bioethanol in the first place. So what do you think of this?
Right. I was actually, you know, I think that we're really going to begin to see what the fallout is as a result of seeing crops that are basically just being grown and harvested just for fuel. I was listening to NPR just yesterday, and they interviewed a farmer who basically was just trying to be able to afford to buy corn for a corn crop for food consumption, not for ethanol. And it's caused a real shift in the economy, so much so that he's unable to buy corn at the rate that he had previously purchased it for, just the seed itself. I'm concerned.
We're not even talking about anything else. Just the seeds,
right.
He can't even afford them anymore.
Right, and we are beginning to see a lot of the same issues that we're not able to grow the same things that we had been growing because it's no longer economical. People are shifting towards those crops that are going to be able to sell more. Farmers are doing this and resulting in fewer and fewer farmers that are willing to or can afford to grow tomatoes or any other crops that are being used for food consumption. There is a concern there. I was shocked to hear it.
Those little pills that were supposed to feed us for a day that they were talking about in the 70s and the 80s,
yeah.
Like that was going to be our food in the year 2000, and we were going to have flying cars.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care about the flying cars, but those people could come in handy right now.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That is also sort of depressing. Let's talk about something you brought up, Rachel. You wanted to talk about Earth Day. And I'm saying it's not depressing because, well, it's actually about the end of our ecosystem. So that's not such a fun thing. But you guys call it Earth Day, which is mm-hmm. like such a fun Disney-type kind of name. Hey, it's Earth Day. Cool.
It's
so
another excuse for a festival.
Yes.
You know, you get to get together and listen to music and, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Sounds very hippie.
It does. It does. We actually do celebrate Earth Day. And I think one of the reasons that I wanted to bring it up is we have – I work in an interactive tech media company, and we put together a lot of presentations for clients. And probably the number one request that I get, maybe out of 10 requests a week for a new project, probably half of those are somehow tied to a green initiative or an earth-friendly message. So it's really out there, and it's being carried up into all industry.
Yeah. Well, as Gita was saying, the guy from the Green Party has a shot now in the local elections.
The woman.
Oh, sorry, the girl. The woman has a shot. So it really seems to me that basically in the past year or the past 2 years, something clicked somewhere in the Western world, and we're all concerned about global warming now. What happened? What changed in the past 2 years?
Al Gore, I think,
yeah.
for at least United States, being able to present ideas in a movie works very well for the United States.
Gita, did you think about the movie, and did it make a splash in the UK too?
Yeah, it made a splash in the UK, and people were very impressed and very happy that Al Gore won the Nobel Prize.
So we agree that an inconvenient truth. Well, I don't want to say it's what woke people up, but it was definitely a tipping point in that issue, I guess.
I think that and tsunamis and other sorts of very wide...
You know, death and destruction also had a little bit to do with it.
Yeah, that wakes people up a bit.
Okay, I guess this is going to bring that segment to a close, and we are going to stroll on to the last little part to lighten things up, which is, and now for something completely different. So, now for something completely different. This is the last segment of the show in the last five minutes. We just want to lighten the mood a little bit and talk about the silly stuff that happens in our countries. And I guess we're going to be opening it with Gita's little thing. What did you want to talk about?
Well, I thought, you know, given that the elections are happening tomorrow for, you know, London mayor, it was quite a funny thing that's gone on in the last few weeks where the Labour Party has put out a policy statement to its own members that they're only allowed to refer to the opposition candidate for London mayor in a certain way. Now, the opposition candidate, as I mentioned earlier, his name is Boris Johnson, and he is referred to quite often as just Boris, and he's this big, burly, almost albino-looking man for the light, almost white blonde hair, and
right.
He's big and he's quite burly. And they've said you can't refer to him as Boris because that would give him brand recognition. So they've passed a policy amongst their own with a fine attached to it that people should only refer to him as Boris Johnson, his full name, or as the Tory candidate. Anyway, if you went on the mass media and you referred to him as Boris, you could be fined £1,000.
Wow.
It was, you know, it's the run-up to the election. Things are serious, and, you know.
Yeah, and it's working out for them. So maybe they should be doing those stupid things. Rachel, you had something you wanted to mention.
Yeah, the title is "It's My Right to Have a Kid," Pregnant Man Tells Oprah. So, there is a man, and I use air quotes for that, named Thomas Beatty. He was formerly a woman, and he's now pregnant. And he actually was interviewed by Oprah.
Wait. He was formerly a woman, and he had a sex change operation?
Well, he decided that he's had a removal of his breasts, and he takes testosterone. However, he did not take the final step, the genital part of it, because he wanted to eventually have a child. So he said that he wanted to keep his uterus, intending to become pregnant later on in the future. So he grew a beard, removed his breasts. He legally had his gender changed from female to male. And he's currently in a relationship with a woman, and the woman that he's been with for several years could not bear children. So she proceeded to artificially inseminate him at home, and he's now pregnant.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah.
So
yeah.
The first pregnant man, sort of.
Yes, sort of. So there you go.
Gita, anything you want to add on that?
No, do you have any funny stories from Paris for us?
Okay, I have one. To end the show on a fun note again, did you hear the anti-youth box? Did you hear about the anti-youth box thing?
No.
It's a sound device that emits very high, I guess, ultrasound that only people under 20 years old can hear, basically, because they're, you know, hearing degrades over time. So some company is manufacturing those devices and selling them to angry old guys or angry old people for them to put them near their houses or offices or whatever, so that, you know, kids, when they come near that, are going to be disturbed by the sound and not going to stay. So,
Oh my gosh.
That'll get in the way of Halloween.
Yeah,
wow.
Exactly.
Wow. So would it be used like in areas that kids congregate and loiter around to prevent that from happening,
right?
I guess?
I guess the idea, yeah, is to have, you know, those hooligan types not hang around your house, I guess, or neighborhood, or, yeah.
Don't the hooligan types live in big apartment blocks and then they can't even go home then?
Maybe that's the idea. I don't know. This is so ridiculous. Anyway, it was judged illegal by a court, and obviously people are not going to be able to use it in France, at least. I don't know if they're going to make their way to other countries or anything like that. But yeah, the anti-youth box. I'm making fun of it now, but maybe I'm going to.
That's just so bizarre. That
yeah. Hmm. Let's not diss it too much. In 40 years, we might wish that we had one. So, you know. Okay.
Yeah, I can see you being a cantankerous old man, Patrick.
Yeah, actually, in some ways, I already am. okay, we've been going on for quite a while, and I guess we're going to have to bring this show to a close. So I really want to thank you immensely for participating in this first show. I know it was a little bit rocky. We're going to have to work on the format, and I want to tell our listeners that we are definitely going to get better as time goes on. But definitely, Geeta and Rachel, thank you so much for being here. It was really fun, and I hope we'll get a chance to talk again soon.
That's great. Patrick. Thank you. Thanks.
And to our listeners, if you want to send us feedback, email, anything, you can come to the PhileasClub.com is the website. And the email address is contact@thePhileasClub.com. And again, to all of you also, we will talk to you next month. And until then, have fun and be safe. Take care, everyone. Bye.